Hello and welcome to this AHDB podcast. About 2 months ago, the transition period from Britain being a full-blown member of the European Union came to an end. Over the several weeks since, we've seen reports and comments about increased paperwork, delays, and the slow resumption of normal traffic levels at the borders. Oh, and some silly stories about lorry drivers having to hand over their sandwiches to border officials. Brexit deal was a positive step, but COVID created issues around people travelling between states. Throughout March, AHDB is taking a detailed look at the impact of all this on farmers, growers, exporters, and households. What trade deals have been struck, and what does the future hold? I'm John Bates, and in this podcast, we look at what exactly has transpired as businesses exporting food cope with change, be that on a compliance level or managing disruption. Sarah Baker, an agricultural economist with AHDB, is here to tell us about the policies and exactly where we're at. And then we'll be joined by Rizvan Khaled, MD with Euroquality Lamb, who will join us to tell us, as a meat exporter, what his account of how the theory and the reality matches together. Sarah, we got the deal done and everybody thought that it's all probably going to be business as usual, isn't it? What's your take on where we're at?
Well, that's a really good point, John. I think when the deal was done, and let's not underestimate that the deal was done, that I think everybody breathed a huge sigh of relief in the agricultural industry at that point, particularly in the lamb sector. But to have a deal with no tariffs and no quotas was a big achievement in the time they had available. And you're right, a lot of people thought, great, we're home and dry. But what's important to understand is there is a world of difference between trading as a third country with the European Union and being part of that single market. Previously, sending goods to Birmingham was no different to sending goods to Belgium. It was all one, literally one market. Now we are a third country, and so there is this so-called trade friction. And what that means is there is additional paperwork, there are export health certificates, goods have to go through a border inspection post, there has to be advance notification, there has to be sanitary and phytosanitary checks, physical checks at borders, and so on. And all those add costs into the supply chain. The reason that that has come about is the UK is now free to set its own regulations, but it needs to evidence that our exports meet the importer requirements. So hence sandwich gate that you referred to. Previously, these sanitary and phytosanitary requirements meant that, you know, we could keep outside third country goods from getting into the EU and therefore prevent spread of diseases like African swine fever. And so those systems were there for a reason, are there to protect what was previously one single market from goods coming in from elsewhere in the world. And now we are now part of the third country. We're outside the EU. So we face those same barriers, those same sort of regulations in accessing the EU market.
Now, I'm sure in a few minutes when Rizvan joins us, he'll be able to give us the details of precisely what's happened. But my understanding is that AHDB did some estimates or some guesstimates of what the additional costs may be to exporters. What did those work out to be?
Well, we look quite closely at this in our Brexit impact assessment in the run-up towards the EU exit. And we estimated that for livestock products, there'd be between 5% and 8% additional costs, and in crops, probably between 2% and 4%. So it is interesting to see how those pan out.
Sure it is, yeah. I think that maybe that's a good time to bring Rizvan into the conversation. Rizvan, thank you very much for sparing the time and joining the podcast. Just before we get into the details, give me a quick overview of your business, if you would, please.
Hi, John. Hi, Sarah. Great to be here. So my name's Rizvan. I'm MD of Euroquality Lambs. It's a family-owned business. We're based in Craven Arms in Shropshire Hills. And my father's been in the sector since the 70s. And we've run this place in Craven Arms since 1992. So from day one, we've been focused on export. So we've always been doing roughly around 75 to 80% export, primarily into the European market. And that's always been our focal point.
So with the situation as it is now, has that had a negative impact on your business?
Yeah, so I mean, coming back to what Sierra was saying, we were absolutely relieved when they had agreed a deal just before Christmas. It was fundamental to our sector, given about a third of British lamb is exported. So that was a great big relief. But then when the realities and of how to complete the paperwork kicked in, that was a different experience altogether. To give you an idea, it's now taken us, what used to take us maybe 15 minutes after the lorry had completed, it's taken us about 3 hours to complete the documentation before the lorry can leave. And then at the border, depending on whether the lorry has been selected for inspection or not, that could range from 45 minutes to 5, 6, 7 hours. What that has resulted in is that our products can no longer get to our customers on the same day that they were sent out from our product. So they're getting to our wholesalers a day later, which means that they've got 1 day less shelf life to sell the product. And that has an impact both on the quality of the product, but also on the demand, because the customers will be more wary of how much that they buy because they don't want to have older product kicking around. So the first thing that we found is, even when we were working through the processes, and now we've got it pretty slick, these delays of producing the paperwork, checking them over, making sure they don't have any mistakes that could result in them being rejected at the border, are meaning that our products and other people in the sector as well are getting there a day later. And that is having a big impact on the perception of our product now compared to other competitors.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose this is true of every sector that's exporting perishable goods. And I think I've read stories about the horticultural sector, which has got experiencing problems with their products being delayed at the borders. So there's very clearly, you've spelled out the fact that there's an issue around the fact that the perishable goods are now a day older, as it were, for the market to deal with. But there's also a cost. If you're delayed and if you're having to do more paperwork and spend more time getting lorries ready, then that's a real cost. What are you able to give me an estimate of what that is?
Yeah, we've estimated, when you look at all the documentation that ourselves and our importing customers have to complete and the physical costs we have to pay out, we're estimating about £500,000 of extra costs for the trading relationship between us and our customers for the forthcoming year.
Yeah.
And that the reason, if I split that up a little bit, John, just to give listeners a bit of an idea, we have, first of all, the export veterinary certificate. Part of the problem that we have, or the sector has, is that the Food Standards Agency doesn't want to use their own vets to do the export health certificates. You have to go to the commercial market. And the commercial market, there's not a lot of vets around. So the vet that we're using is coming from about 1.5 hours away to do these veterinary certificates. They're not doing any extra checks as such. They're reliant on the already existing health mark that's on the carcasses. But nonetheless, they have to complete this documentation, the export health documentation. There's a charge for that, and frankly, it's the way that system is run is it's a relic of the old days, because you have multiple conditions for each certificate, which has to be scrubbed out by hand by a professional vet, and he has to do that for every language that's on the certificate. So if we're sending a product to Germany, we would have a certificate in English, in French, crossing the border into France, and in German. And he has to produce the documentation and cross out the conditions that do not apply to that consignment going over into that market. It takes a long time for him to do that. And once he has done that, we have to check it to make sure there's no errors in it. before we can send that with the lorry. So that's the first bit. We then have to produce with the lorry invoice, whereas in the past we used to wait till our customers received the meat and they'd weighed it and we'd confirm the weight that they received and we'd invoice on that received weight basis. Now for customs processing, you have to send an invoice with the load and then have a credit note or a debit note once they've received the meat the other side. So doing the extra CMR with the invoice and doing the export agent declarations, that then allows the lorry to leave. We have to then send that information whilst the lorry's left to the import customer's agent, who has to then do the import agent declaration. So there's cost for that. He has to do an import. The equivalent of our health certificates is called the traces system in Europe. So they have to enter that detail on the traces. When the lorry arrives, there's costs at Eurotunnel and there's the import vet costs for them to check the paperwork and a sample of the physical goods over there. So all of those have a physical cost between ourselves and our customers, which we're estimating at this moment in time to be about 125 per carcass ship. The other side to that is that the paperwork is the same, John, whether it's a load of lambs or whether it's a pallet. So some customers, particularly some of our offer customers, they might only order a pallet of liver or heart, something like that. But then their cost of ordering that is the same as a customer who might order half a load. And we've started losing those customers because they're saying that actually the extra cost isn't worth buying directly. They're actually buying from larger importers because the paperwork cost is the same, whether it's one pallet or one load. And listeners may have heard in the media as well that this issue about groupage. Yep. And groupage is when meat companies, I mean, we're a single site, so we're sending everything out from our site. But where people have got multiple sites or where the haulier is picking up pallets from different customers to send across, that has a lot extra risks with it because you have more paperwork on the lorry. And there's a chance, particularly if they're different customers, that if one paperwork is wrong, then the whole lorry gets stopped at the border until the correct paperwork is sent to the border to release that lorry. So many lorries have, many hauliers have stopped taking groupage loads. So there's lots of knock-on impacts because of the requirements for the paperwork and getting the paperwork right. A lot of our admin time isn't as much in doing the paperwork, but it's checking it and cross-checking it and triple-checking it. So we do not have those mistakes at the border. Yesterday, I'll give you one prime example. We had a lorry going out, and when we sent the export health certificate to the import agent, and they spotted that the vet had accidentally, because it's human nature, had ticked ambient temperature as well as the chilled temperature, when only the chilled temperature should have been ticked. By this point, the lorry had already left. So we had to ring the vet up and he had to go and meet the lorry somewhere to physically change that export health certificate, to take some pictures on his phone, to send it to us for us to try to upload into a PDF to send back to the import agent for them to put that onto the system. Otherwise, there was a real risk that lorry wouldn't have made it through the border. So there's real problems with the way the current system is for trade.
I'll bring Sarah back in a moment, but are you realistic about the fact that this system is going to be able to bed down and it will change and it will get better, or are you resigned to the fact that we are where we are and this is a consequence of no longer being a member state?
Well, I think as a country, we do need to move on. This is where we are. However, the system can be vastly improved from a digitalization perspective. There should be no need in the modern day and age for a export health certificate to have to physically accompany the load and for them to physically by hand cross out different conditions on it. There needs to be a way that this can be digitized. And it can be sent purely digitally, and it can then be edited before it crosses the border, before getting there. However, that requires both our government to do some work on the systems, because there's some stuff that we can do without renegotiating with the EU. But then also there's the renegotiate with the EU required to accept that in principle. So I do think there are ways of making this process far less bureaucratic. But the way it is at the moment, it is a I've likened it to a slow puncher at the moment, because we can't go as fast as we would normally go. We as a business have not been killing the last 6-7 Wednesdays, and we've never ever done that before. And obviously there's the COVID is a big game in town at the moment, so that is masking a lot of the trade issues that are occurring because the demand is lower. Livestock prices are higher for lamb traders at the moment, and the euro rate is against us, so all these effects have a dampening effect on demand. But it is if we want to go back to trading and the volumes we want to trade to, the system is just simply not fit for purpose.
Sarah, perhaps I can bring you back in then. So there's a real cost, isn't there? And one of the things that AHDB and people like yourself as an agricultural economist, what you're aware of all the time is that we're trying to take cost out. We're trying to drive cost down. You know, this is punishing, the bottom line.
Yeah, absolutely. John, for 40 years, we've worked towards this just-in-time supply chain, really, really tight margins, really efficient. And Rizvan has outlined really clearly the reality of our theoretical trade friction. He's really brought it to life. You know, the loss of that competitive advantage compared to, say, product coming across from Ireland, you know, he's lost that 24-hour additional shelf life. The fact that the costs can't be spread. So if a customer orders one pallet, that costs exactly the same in admin terms as an entire lorry. Those sorts of issues. Why can't export health certificates be computerized? Why are we still working on a paper-based system in 2021? Those sorts of issues. And I think the questions that we need to ask, and there are several, are first, where do those costs land? And of course it depends on the strength of demand for the product, what we as economists would call the elasticity of demand, price elasticity. But who's going to absorb those extra costs? And my guess would be that they would be spread throughout the supply chain, which then begs the question, if we're working on already tight margins, what's going to happen to that supply chain? I think at the moment, from when I talk to suppliers, they are 100% focused on just making sure they deliver, making sure that their customers are happy, making sure the product gets to where it needs to be, and that double triple checking of paperwork and trying to avoid these bumps in the road is all aimed at that. But I think when the dust settles, people will have to take a step back and say, is this still financially viable? And as Rizvan has intimated, it may not be financially viable to send pallets of goods across to the EU, or it may make more sense to have a foot in the EU camp, or it may make sense to, you know, make certain adjustments in the supply chain. And that's about separating out what are the initial sort of challenges, if you like, the sort of learning curve of trading as a third country, and what is the fact that these are here to stay and this is the new normal. And I think only the sort of weeks and months will tell us that. But inevitably, despite the free trade agreement, there are going to be changes within the supply chain because of that trade friction.
Yes,
I need something there, John. Yeah, I just want to echo that. I absolutely agree with what Sarah just said, in that I do expect the way that the systems are for trade to reconfigure. So I expect that it'll end up being larger exporters sending to larger importers, because for the smaller customers, and we've already discovered that some of our smaller customers have stopped buying the smaller pallets from us. They're either buying in a bigger quantity, less frequently, or they're buying from other larger importers because the costs don't stack up. You can't spread the costs out on that load. So the way the system is, and I think this will happen across many industries, that there will be a reconfiguration of trade. So it is very difficult to tell because everything has been masked by COVID demand. And also, as a UK, we're not subjecting imports to the same levels of checks as the exports are going. I mean, once we start doing that, perhaps there'll be more incentives for the Europeans to try to make the system work that bit better. But we have to. It's difficult to know when the dust will settle because, in our perspective, I think that we're still maybe another 4 or 5 months away before we'll really know the impact of Brexit.
So, I mean, what you said there is you said that the imports into this country are not being done to the same level of scrutiny, as it were. So is that where we need to move towards so that we level up the playing field?
I think so. From April, the government are going to require export health certificates on meat products coming in and the customs declarations. However, my understanding is even though they're going to require them, there's not going to be a huge level of enforcement if things are not quite correct. And from July, that's when full across all goods, food or not, and presumably full enforcement will probably come in from the 1st of July. So they probably have a longer lead-in period. But certainly if they have the same hoops to jump through that we as exporters are having to jump through, there will certainly be more incentive to try to have a better system that would enable trade to flow more freely.
Sarah, it sounds like when there was this sort of collective sigh of relief around the free trade agreement, where there was a view that, you know, prices would be sort of respected and that, you know, there wouldn't be too much sort of undercutting going on. It sounds as though there's a possibility that, you know, farmers are going to see pressure on prices because somebody's got to pay this bill.
Yes, I think that's right. I think if you... It's a question of perspective, I suppose. Although we did flag this well in advance of leaving the EU, and if you look at our red meat to market report that we did with Andersons, Michael Haverty actually looked statistically at this, and he already said exactly what Rizvan has just explained, that these costs will fall disproportionately on the small to medium-sized enterprise because of that law of probability. Because if you are the lorry that gets, you know, held up for 7 hours at a border inspection post, if you're a huge exporter, you can spread that over X number of loads. If you're a small exporter and you get caught with one of those, it's disproportionately expensive. So we knew those costs were there. So it hasn't, if you like, come as a surprise. But the main focus, the main risk to the lamb industry was the risk of tariffs with trading with the EU. And because that was avoided, it was almost like this was relatively a minor issue. And because that has been avoided, what the next big issue to come up is exactly that. You know, and these trade frictions come into light. The other thing that I would say in that I think some court has caught some people by surprise is the fact that having struck a trade deal, I think a lot of commentators thought that the mood music, the sort of goodwill was there in order to iron out some of these issues. For instance, we offered that grace period up until the 1st of April where we wouldn't check EU goods coming in. They didn't reciprocate. They checked ours from the 1st of January, and they're embracing those checks with an enthusiasm that is you know, anecdotally quite formidable. So you know, we need to understand those nuances as well. And Rizvan's quite right. Will that change when the checks are reciprocated? Will that change when EU goods coming into the UK are checked? We know COPAGICA, the EU union, the farming representatives have something to say about that. And you're quite right. When the boot's on the other foot, will they be more willing to come to the table and address some of these issues? Some of them, as I say, are a fundamental part of trading as a third country, and therefore they are things that we need to adapt and get used to. Others, that there's plenty of room to improve this, as Rizwan has said so clearly, there's plenty of room for improvement in this process going forward.
Okay, now there's a flip side, of course, to all of this, in as much as that trade deals have been struck and there's work going on all the time around securing markets. AHDB is doing a lot of work to help exporters get secure markets in other countries and so on. How's all that looking as global Britain, Sarah?
I think that's a very important aspect to look at. Obviously, one of the glittering prizes of leaving the EU was this ability to strike trade deals throughout the rest of the world. The issue with that, I think with lamb, you've got a rising demand for lamb globally, which is positive. You've got the surge of the middle class in Asia. You've got the North African countries and you've got Africa where demand for lamb as incomes rise and as GDP rises is strengthening. What you've got to be aware of is the time gap, if you see what I mean. Developing those markets will take time. The pickup in demand will take time. We have some highly competitive producers around the globe that are also geographically closer to a lot of those markets. And so building up a strong demand for UK lamb will take time. The friction with the EU market, which has been our biggest market for the last, 40 years, is happening now. And that's the sort of juxtaposition. You've got an issue now with the trade friction that is impacting on lamb supply chains today. And you've got a sort of theoretical, if you like, longer term growing demand globally for a product that in 10 or 15 years time here in the UK may be in short supply and prices will be driven upwards. I know they're very high at the moment, but that's more of a short term thing. So you have got these two things going on, which could, and a lot of commentators said, well, one will compensate for the other. Well, yes, in the long term, it may well do, but not now and not in the next 5 years. That is much more a longer term vision to develop those global markets.
And Rizwan, in your business, are you seeing other opportunities outside of your sort of normal trading partners and countries?
Yeah, I mean, we're very supportive of AHDB's efforts to open up the markets across the world. And there is a place for us in different markets, whether it's the Middle East, whether it's America, etc. But we have to remember that compared to our cousins down under, we're more expensive, so we have to position ourselves accordingly. So it is the premium end of the market whenever we tend to go into, because if we try to compete at a commodity level, we're not going to be able to win that battle. The only thing in our favor is that supply is short globally, and demand is rising. But these markets will help to an extent, but it will never replace the EU market in my opinion.
So it's important to try and remember that we're operating in a niche market and don't get involved with the race to the bottom. Yeah. Sarah, just to sort of round this off, we've talked about March being a month where AHDB is doing lots of work and producing reports. Did you want to just give us a quick overview of the work that's being done that levy payers will be able to access?
Yes, we have a real sort of close look at the sheep industry and the global opportunities and both the domestic market, the EU market and the global market, patterns of production across the world and where the opportunities lie. So that will be out by Easter. Presumably would be of enormous interest to the audience today. In addition, on our website, we've got a lot of work that examines the potential trade deals that are coming down the line. So we're looking at Australia, which will probably be the first over the line, New Zealand, the US trade deal, and we're examining the key offensive defensive interests with those deals. We're also modelling that work. So we're doing some economic modelling in conjunction with Harper Adams University University, to really sort of delve into the detail of that and look at how domestic prices may be impacted by those trade deals as they come down the line. So there's a huge amount of work going on post-EU exit to really start examining our place in a global marketplace.
Okay, thank you. We'll leave it there. So thank you to my guests, Sarah Baker and Rizvan Khaled, and to podcast producer Aisha Shabnam. Stay safe, stay well. I'm John Bates. Thanks for listening.